This show is a proud member of the Dice Tower Network, the Justice League of board game podcasts. Find out more at dicetower.com.
And welcome to another episode of Family Gamers Podcast. This is episode 216.
Hey, hello everybody. We are very excited to be here with you this week. This week on the Family Gamers Podcast, we are going to talk about something. Actually, I think it's probably a little bit earlier in the year than we normally talk about spooky games.
But... Nope, it's really not. Really? We usually do it more than a week before Halloween, as long as we're planning correctly.
I see. Well, here's the thing. Next week is going to be an odd number show. We're going to have Helena Capel on the show, which I'm super excited about. The week after that is basically going to be Halloween. So in order to make sure that we get a spooky game show out, it had to come out this week.
But we figured we would use it as an opportunity to not just talk about spooky games, but talk about how Halloween is probably changing for a lot of people this year.
Yeah, we're going to have a weird Halloween experience.
Yeah.
So we're going to talk about that second half of the show. But first, hello, everybody. Welcome to the Family Gamers Podcast. As always, this podcast is sponsored by First Move Financial.
Did you know that that 401k you have from an old employer may be getting weighed down by fees? Brightscope recently reported that the average fees for small plans range between 1.5% and 2%, with plenty of plans paying more than 2% a year in fees. Luckily, your 401k has to report the fees that you're paying, so if you look at your statements carefully, the fees should be in there. To give some context, if you left $10,000 in an old 401k that was charging a 2% administration fee, 20 years later, that fee would have cost you almost $5,000. If you want help looking at your 401k or 401ks to make sure you're not overpaying, go to firstmovefinancial.com/familygamers to set up a time to chat.
Thank you to First Move Financial for sponsoring this episode of the show.
So tell me your fact.
You knew I had one.
Yes.
This is actually really interesting.
To you.
To me. You really don't care, do you?
Go ahead.
Sometimes my facts are more contrived than others. Like last week's fact was...
Yeah, this one's less contrived. Go ahead.
Right. Did you know that on a baseball, there are those red stitches that form the like peanut shapes?
Yes.
Two peanut shapes? There are 108 double stitches. So in one direction and then in the other direction.
Okay.
For a total of 216 stitches on a baseball.
Okay, that is a clever fact.
That's pretty neat. And you know what? That's really all I wanted from you people. Huh, that's pretty neat. And we can move on with our lives and talk about games.
All right, well, then let's talk about what we've been playing.
You see what I have to live with? Unbelievable. All right, what have we been playing?
More Food Fighters.
We have been playing more Food Fighters. That game is super fun. I'm really having a lot of fun with that game.
Honestly, especially with Halloween coming up and a child who has an obsession with cute food, I really kind of want to look into getting the expansion with the donuts and the baked goods and the whatever all else it is.
See what we can do.
But we're having a lot of fun and we're making up custom teams. It's a good time.
Awesome. Awesome. You taught me how to play a game that is on brand for this show in Cloaked Cats.
Yeah, I read through the rules. They were not hard.
Unsurprisingly, it is a Hobba game.
It is a fun little deduction game. We haven't played it with the kids yet, but I think it hits right in the sweet spot of cute enough to keep the kids really interested, but simple enough that nobody's going to be confused on how to play.
Sure. I think that makes sense.
Yeah.
It is not a good game at two.
No, it's not great.
There's just not enough variety, and it's really difficult to let the game breathe.
Yeah. I'm looking forward to playing it with the kids. We just haven't gotten a chance yet. In fact, I looked at my list and literally every game I've played this week, with one exception, was just me and one other person. Whether it was me and you or me and one of the kids. I think we're in a stage right now with we're always kind of on top of each other. And then when we finally get some free time, we don't want to be on top of each other anymore.
Yeah, I think we're in that transition phase still, or we're trying to settle into our new normal.
Yeah, well, part of why it feels so weird that we're still in this phase at the end of October is because it takes some month or 6 weeks which normally means we've settled in by the beginning of October.
Well, here's the thing.
But we started school super, super late this year.
We actually haven't had back-to-back, air quote, normal weeks yet.
Because I know.
We've done this slow phase-in of the hybrid system, and then we had a week with
a holiday in it,
which was Columbus Day this past week. So just we haven't had the chance to be normal. And when, I mean, we're not normal anyway.
I just want to be normal.
And it's just really, really hard because we can't quite find that time that is the expected downtime that we can play some games. But last week, I went to our friendly local game store because there was a game that we ordered a while ago that finally came in.
Yes, we got our copy of Fort.
We got our copy of Fort from Leader Games.
It feels like everyone on social media has been talking about this game.
It's super fun. This is a
it's
deck
so cute.
Builder where you are building a fort.
You're building a tree fort, and you can put friends over in the lookout. And
you can fill your backpack. And
with pizza and toys.
Gathering of toys and pizza. It's great.
And it's a great engine builder, deck builder.
Mm-hmm.
I've played it twice now. I'm really looking forward to playing it with more than two players, although I think it's very good at two players. But I'm looking forward to having more kind of time in between turns and more opportunities for the follow-on actions for other people between turns.
Yeah, I really do like how, even in a two-player game, it became clear pretty early that different kinds of strategies can manifest.
Yes.
And the different suits are not just different categories of the same stuff.
Yes. Every suit definitely has its strong points in strategy.
Right. In terms of whether it allows you to generate more resources, whether it allows you to get things into the lookout better or put stuff in the backpack better. And all
or call through your deck faster.
Or call through your deck faster. And all of those things really define the strategy that you're going to have to lean into while you play the game. And you pretty much have to assess that from your starting hand.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say, is a lot of other games do some elements of that, but I haven't played any other deck building, engine building type game where you basically start with a random starting hand.
With the exception of your two best friends.
Yeah, you get 2 out of your 10 cards are guaranteed. The other 8 could be anything.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I am really happy with it. I do wish there was a little bit more variety in the perks because it's really limited to
sure, I think there's 7
per person or something.
Yeah, and there's only like 7 in the entire deck.
But that's fine. I mean, this is a $25 game or a $30 game. It's not expensive. I'm really pleased with what comes in that package.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
So that is Fort from Leader Games. Definitely very happy with that. The other thing about it is that it's just fun and silly, but with real mechanics. Like, it's not a silly game with silly mechanics. It's a silly game with real mechanics. And so the game mechanically has meat to it, but you can still look through the cards and be like, ha, 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 that's so great play.
Exactly.
And it sets a mood that I really appreciate.
Yeah, I'm with you on that one. All right. Well, I've also played a couple of games this week that are really excellent at two players. One of those has been Prisma Arena. We are super looking forward to this game coming out from Hub Games in November. It is an awesome arena fighting game. Our kids have absolutely dove into it and love it. And they're kind of gradually dragging you and me along because we just don't have the time to invest in the game that they do.
It's not at all about a lack of desire to play the game. It's just that they are like all in on it. And yes. I have no problem with that because it's great. So Prisma Arena is available for pre-order now. It will come out on November 13th.
Okay.
So head over to hubgames.com. We'll include a link in the show notes. It's available for pre-order now. It's definitely something to look into. I really, really enjoy it.
Another one that we pulled out this week was Skulk Hollow.
Love this game.
So this is one of the first times when I've played it where our strategies were so evenly matched that the game just dragged on and on and on with both sides barely hanging on.
That's so
for
funny.
Like half an hour.
That's so funny.
In the end, it came down to getting the right cards at the right time so you could finally push that extra little bit over the line.
I mean, I think that happens.
Yeah, right?
It
does.
Reality, yeah.
It feels sort of well-earned, but also kind of like, it was going to happen to somebody eventually.
Right.
I also found a misprint on one of the cards and had to go to BGG to find out what the misprint was supposed to mean. But I had a good time with it regardless. It probably actually made my side of the game, I was playing as the Guardian, probably made my side a little bit harder because I saw this same card three or four times over the course of the game. Worked out in the end.
I'm really looking forward to the sequel to Skull Hollow, which I've seen pictures of. I know nothing about. I assume it's going to hit Kickstarter sometime in early 2021, maybe. I don't.
Probably going to be good. You know.
Yeah, almost certainly. Mm-hmm. Yep, that's the one. We also played a game that we got a Kickstarter prototype for, which I really, really enjoyed. You played it digitally last week or the week before, and this is Studies in Sorcery from Weird Giraffe.
Yeah, so I played this with Chris Goodlett in his After the Interview game night that he runs every week. We played it with a couple other guys and the designer, Chris Klein. So I got to walk through all of it on Tabletopia. I am not a fan of playing games on Tabletopia, but it's worth it once in a while. And then the prototype that we were going to get to play finally arrived, and I got to play it with you.
Yes, I really like it.
I think we might pull it out to try playing with the kids around Halloween, because I'm not sure it's really our jam, but it's definitely got a spooky theme that fits Halloween well.
Yeah, it does. I mean, the theme at its core is a little dark. You are digging up graves and looking at the items in the graves. But honestly, like, it doesn't feel dark.
It doesn't feel particularly creepy or spooky. It's sort of a gentle nudge on, haha, we're building a giant ball of bones. Isn't that funny?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it really falls into that spoopy genre.
Not quite creepy horror, but dealing with a creepy-ish subject.
So this is a resource management card drafting game, I guess? Not really card drafting. What would you call that?
It's a resource harvesting with some drafting, some press your luck elements to it as well, and a little bit of engine building.
Yeah. Yeah, that makes sense. There's definitely an engine building aspect to the game. We talked about this a lot. I would like to see a modification to this where at lower player counts, there's more rounds.
Yeah, just giving you more opportunities to do something.
Right. But I understand why it is the way it is. I think you could accomplish this with like literally one more card in the whole game.
Very possibly, yeah.
Yeah, and then you could do that. So that was my biggest critique, is I just felt like you're building this engine that you don't have the time to use. And that's really frustrating.
I think it's also a case of, this happens sometimes in games where you have a lot of random card draws, that sometimes just the things don't line up well in the early game, and so you feel like you're spinning your wheels for a while. And that can make the game feel too short as well.
Sure. Yeah, I think we need to play it more in order to really get a good sense of that. This is just my take after one play, but that is Studies in Sorcery. It was Degrees in Darkness. I think Carla actually mentioned it when she was on our show.
Yes, she did.
It was something she was working on. It has been renamed, and it is currently on Kickstarter. I believe it has already funded.
It has funded, and you know what? It's only $19, so this is a good deal if you like that kind of spoopy, you know, slightly spooky, slightly creepy, the idea of dealing with dark magic but not actually being real creepy about it.
Right.
I think it's an excellent choice.
I think we'll probably be talking about this again next week and maybe the week after.
I think so, probably.
Especially during this season. And there's 12 days left in the Kickstarter, which means that when this comes out, there will be 10 days left in the Kickstarter. So we'll talk about it next week.
Yes. All right.
That is Studies in Sorcery from Weird Giraffe Games, available on Kickstarter right now.
All right. I got just a couple more. Our son and I played some more Adventure Mart. This is another one of those games that is fine at two players and definitely better at more, because again, it's a deck building, engine building kind of game.
There is something about Adventure Mart that I am just really, really bad at this game.
We need to play more.
Yeah, I mean, obviously. But every time I play this, I just get wrecked. R-E-K-T, wrecked.
Well, maybe we'll try to fit some in this week then.
Sounds good.
All right.
I mean, listen, I have no pride left in my life. I'm okay with losing at games.
Speaking of losing at games, Asher and I learned how to play Meeple Land.
Yeah.
And I thought I was doing pretty okay, and I was trying to be like, it's all right, buddy, you're going to do okay, and he wrecked me.
Yes!
To be fair, he didn't know he wrecked me either until we added up our scores at the end, and I was like, Oh. Okay, then.
That's fantastic. I like it.
A 10-point spread on a game where you only got about 30 points. That's a big difference.
Yes, it is.
We had a great time with this. Meepaland from Blue Orange. You are building an amusement park by paying for tiles, doing a tile laying puzzle. There's also kind of a worker placement element in that you have to get the right spaces out into your park for the types of visitors that your park is going to get. The meeples who are visiting your park come in four different colors, and different bonuses can give you more money, which helps you during the game, or they can help you absorb more visitors, which helps you more at the end of the game. It's a really interesting multi-layered kind of puzzle that's, again, one of those that's not too difficult to get into. It actually reminded me in many ways of Carcassonne, which I didn't anticipate going into it. I'm really looking forward to showing it to you.
Well, I saw the prototype of this at New York Toy Fair 2 weeks before the world exploded. And wow. It was such a prototype that it wasn't even really laid out. Brandon was like, hey, check out this other game that's coming later this year.
Mm.
And credit to Blue Orange that the game still came this year, by the way.
Because
a lot of stuff has been missing dates. But I really, really do want to play this game. It looks fantastic. Our writer Nick has been talking about how great this game looks too. And I'm not really surprised to hear that it plays well also.
So that was Meepaland from Blue Orange. One more super quick thing. Cinco Linco from Big Potato Games. Last week on the holiday, we had a little bit of a play date with your best friend's family.
Mm-hmm.
We're basically in each other's bubbles.
Pretty much. It's true.
Our kids had such a great time together. And as things were sort of generally wrapping up, the 13-year-old turned to our 12-year-old and said, hey, can we play a game? They were like, they debated for 5 minutes and then picked up Cinco Linco. And to this kid's credit, he looked over and Mrs. Smith, you want to play too? I'm like, yes, of course I do.
Oh, he suckered you right in.
Oh, yeah. But it's one of those games. It's a five in a row tic-tac-toe type game. I find it so much more fun at 3 and 4 players than at 2.
Sure.
So in a 3-player game, we had a great time. And in the end, we made Claire choose who was going to win because I had 4 in a row and our 13-year-old friend had 4 in a row, and she could only block one of us.
Who did she block?
Me.
I figured.
I mean, that's fine. I don't mind. I can take it. I'm a big girl.
All right. I'm proud of you. So that is it for what we have been playing. We have all sorts of different stuff we want to talk about the second half of the show, including what we are going to do to cope with a weird Halloween situation
this year.
Very
weird Halloween.
What some other people have said their Halloween plans or Halloween traditions might include from the Family Gamers community. And we'll talk about all those things when we come back.
We'll be right back.
Bah.
Who's the goat?
Bah!
No, who's the goat?
Bah, oh wait me. All goats aside, today's snap review is for Who's the Goat? A hilarious party game that's one part prediction, one part competition, and all parts fun. Pick who you think will be the best at a variety of off-the-wall challenges, then vote by tossing your squishy goat. You score a tin can if you voted for the player who did the greatest, and the goat scores a tin can for also being great.
Who's the Goat is designed by Peggy Brown and published by Big G Creative. What did you think of the art, Izzy?
The game's art is very crisp and with a nice palette of red, white, and blue. Fonts on the cards are large enough for readers for young and old. Written challenge cards have pencil icons on them, so you will know when you'll need pencil and paper.
The goat theme is carried throughout all the components. The tokens have tin cans on them, and a cute-looking goat appears in all the cards and the notepad.
Most importantly, the 6 goats you vote with are made of squishy foam. They have a different colored belt on them, so you know whose is whose. So how about the game mechanics, Dad?
It's really quite simple, actually. A player grabs a challenge card from the deck and reads it aloud, and then says, "Ready, set, goat." Then everyone tosses their goat at another player or keeps it for themselves. Anyone who has a goat will participate in the challenge. Some challenges are written, verbal, and even physical. Some challenge card examples are...
Who's the goat at creating the best logo using their initials in 30 seconds? At writing the most palindromes in 30 seconds? Or who's the goat with the best touchdown dance?
And my all-time favorite, who's the goat at headbanging to an imaginary rock song?
Yeah!
Yeah, rock and roll. For those of you who want some physical challenge, you can see who's the goat at doing the splits, or spinning in a circle with a goat on their head. After a challenge is won, all players who tossed a goat at the winner gets a tin can. If you won the challenge and voted for yourself, take an extra tin can. In most cases, there is a clear winner. However, there could be a challenge where there isn't. So, all players who didn't participate hold a goat vote to select a winner. If all goats participated, then everyone casts a vote for anyone but themselves. Play continues for a total of 4 rounds, ensuring that everyone read a challenge card 4 times. The player with the most tin can tokens wins. Now that we talked about the gameplay a little, let's shift gears and talk about our expectations going into Who's the Goat?
I was excited to play it, though I didn't know how the goats were going to be used in the game. I really thought it would be like a goat farming game instead of what it is. I really didn't know what to think about some of the challenges, but I gave them a shot. There were some that people voted for me and I really didn't want to do, but I did it anyway. I even won a couple of those. How about you, Dad?
To be brutally honest, not much, because it's a party game and those really aren't my cup of tin. Catch the goat pun there?
Ha ha ha.
However, we spent a beautiful Sunday afternoon on our patio giving this one a spin. And we had a blast. With your grandparents, as a matter of fact. For me, playing with the right people made this fun. Acting or improv in front of others is really outside my comfort zone, so I definitely wouldn't play this with folks outside of our family. But with you kids, anytime. Obviously, my favorite challenges were writing. I didn't mind the physical ones. We had one where we had to scoot our goat across the floor with our noses to see who could move it the farthest in 30 seconds. Full disclosure, there are some hard ones. No way am I going to attempt doing the splits. And that's fine because I can essentially bet on someone else to do it. When playing with folks who know me, they wouldn't dare bet on me for those singing or acting challenges. If they make that mistake once, they probably won't do it again. Were there any surprises in Who's the Goat, Izzy?
Tossing the squishy goats when voting was really fun. Some of the challenges were surprisingly difficult, like draw a circle the size of a quarter without looking at one. That's really, really hard. Draw a self-portrait in 30 seconds? Who can do that? Speaking pig Latin? I don't even know what that is. Can someone explain it to me?
We'll take that one offline, Izzy.
There are some funny challenges like the best eye roller or at shaking their booty.
Yep, the latter wasn't me.
What surprised you, Dad?
It's aesthetically pleasing for a party game. Usually they're all pretty bland with text on cards. Concept-wise, everything gels. Personally, party games aren't usually my jam, but a game that brings a family together for laughs is all good in my book. The challenges I liked the most were the mental and writing ones. As a family, we had a great time, and that's where the win was. Watching you and your brother, along with your grandparents, doing silly impersonations was priceless. Watching my mom pretend to be a chicken and lay an egg using the squishy goat was comedy gold. And we do have photographic evidence to prove it. The challenge where we all pushed goats across the floor with our noses was pretty hilarious and one of my favorite physical ones. For the record, I won that one. The win for me was an activity we can do as a family that's not super serious and lets everyone be a little goofy. Oh, and one more thing I'd like to give the designer kudos for is a finite ending. This party game doesn't drone on and on and on and on and on like others do. And that's huge for me. There's a set expectation when the game ends. Everyone reads a card 4 times, then totals up their tin cans. Poof, there's your winner. In my opinion, Who's the Goat doesn't overstay its welcome thanks to this. So, Izzy, how do we rate Who's the Goat?
4 out of 5 tin cans.
And that's
who's a goat in a snap.
All right, my turn to read. So, who's the goat at doing the best impression of a mime? Ready, set, goat.
Wait, what? Dad, you've got to be kidding me. Our listeners can't see that, you silly Billy.
And we're back.
So we have talked about spooky games and done kind of our generic spooky game list a few times before.
3 times, in fact. If you're curious, that is episode 166, episode 116, and episode 68.
That is really remarkably close to every 50 episodes. I mean, it's a year, I get it, whatever, but I'm kind of impressed with us.
I'm kind of impressed with our consistency. However, our list doesn't change a whole lot year over year.
Right. So we've been slowly adding to these lists. And so we kind of were talking about this year and saying, you know, we don't really just want to do a spooky game list because it seems a little bit redundant, derivative.
And then our town decided to basically cancel trick-or-treating.
Yeah. So they don't really have the authority to do that. They can't just tell private citizens, yeah, like, you're not allowed to go to other houses or whatever. But in the context of the recommendations of the Board of Selectmen, they've said, you know, we don't really want to do this. And so what they're going to do is some like weird parade where you dress up your car and you drive through some section of town. And at the end, they hand you a bag of candy.
A section of town that is right around the corner from our house. So we're not going to be able to leave our neighborhood.
Yeah, well, that part's fine. But honestly, like, I appreciate what they're doing and you appreciate what they're doing. But it's lame. I mean, I understand, but it's lame.
Yeah, it is not what our family wants to do.
Right.
So we started thinking a lot about, well, what is it we really enjoy about Halloween other than dressing up and getting other people to admire our costumes? Because that's kind of the point of dressing up for Halloween.
So for us, Halloween has really always been a thing where it's kind of like our cosplay. We don't really do cosplay at conventions.
Well, you and I don't.
Well, right. But for Halloween, we kind of go, I mean, we don't go Heidi Klum all out, but we do family costumes. We've done all of the Paladins of Voltron before. We mm-hmm. did the Mario Brothers with Ghost and Peach and Toadstool when we only had two kids. We did the Incredibles. I think that was probably my favorite costume.
I think that was my favorite too. Especially because it was a lot less work.
Well, and we had the perfect demographics for it. I mean,
we did.
It was amazing. Yes. That's really what we like to do with Halloween, is we like to do the whole thing. And a lot of adults really seem impressed by the fact that you and I
get into it
with the kids, which
to be fair, it's about every other year that we actually get into it. But whatever. Yeah,
but we can't do that this year.
Well, there's not much point in, you know, dressing up and making costumes if you're gonna stay home. The whole point of costumes is to get out there, whether it's a party or trick-or-treating, something. So we won't be dressing up this year. However, what else really matters about Halloween? Candy.
Yes.
Candy matters.
Candy matters. And we're not going to take candy away from our kids, even if horrible coronavirus diseases try their best.
Yes. So probably we're going to go buy several large bags of candy and just be like, all right, we didn't trick or treat, but the good news is that means everybody got their favorites and nothing but their favorites. All right.
My plan is that we literally go to Walmart with the kids, like just let them be like, pick a big bag. It's your bag to pick. And then we're going to mix all three of them together. And then we all get to just chow down on candy while watching movies.
Yes.
That's the plan. So let's talk about some of those traditions. So we always get some pumpkins.
Yep.
We don't always do the jack-o'-lantern thing, but we always get pumpkins.
We usually pick out pumpkins as a family.
Right.
Well, me and the kids.
Work.
Yeah. That's going to be a little tougher this year, although I think we're still going to manage it. We nearly always carve the pumpkins and do jack-o'-lanterns. We always decorate the pumpkins in some way. When the kids were littler, I did like paint and stickers and things like that because I didn't want to deal with multiple children and knives.
What a concept.
I know, right? Now that the kids are a little bit older, we do always carve up pumpkins. And as they get older and older, that means I do less and less of the work, which I appreciate.
Right. But we all know about pumpkin carving. That's not anything new. Let's talk about some things that we do that are a little bit different. We do decorate our house. We basically have a pile of decorations that we have the kids just go nuts with.
Yeah, this is pretty much mostly our kids doing. They've picked up decorations from our neighbor's yard sales. A couple of times people have been like, oh, you guys like decorating for Halloween? Let me give you more stuff. I'm not actually a fan of decorating for Halloween, but I will let the kids do it as long as they don't ask me to do it with them. Maybe that's the curmudgeon in me coming out.
So I mentioned this before, we did reach out to the Family Gamers community to see what other people were doing. Nick Martinelli is opting out. He's doing basically the same thing we are doing with his family. Halloween party day, spooky movies, pizza, and hopefully some games.
Pizza sounds good. I think we should add pizza.
I'm fine with that.
All right.
All right. Derek Scott says that he will be playing one of his favorites, which is Spookies, the board game Spookies, with his kids who are 7 and 5. So definitely a good one to keep an eye out for.
We know that there are other people out here like Jeremy who says, I don't really know what we're doing yet. We're kind of waiting to see what happens to make a decision. Also, she says that she has some kids who are too old for trick-or-treating.
Lame.
Which doesn't really mean too old. It just means that they would rather hang out with their friends than with mom and dad, which I get.
You know what we used to have in our neighborhood? We used to have a guy who would put hay bales on his little, like, trailer and basically do, like, a hayride around the neighborhood.
Yeah, and he would stop about every fifth house and all the kids would pile off the trailer, run up to the houses and trick-or-treat, and then run back to the trailer. It was adorable.
Yeah, I mean, I think any real trailer can be used for something like this. Like, there might be safety regulations, protocols in your area that would restrict you from doing something like this. But if you have a relatively simple trailer, I mean, this is something that you could maybe do.
Maybe it's something that we should do in the future, not this year.
Sure, definitely.
I've heard from a lot of other people that they're setting up almost like an Easter egg hunt in their house and in their yard, but with Halloween-appropriate candy. I like that idea, but I don't even do Easter egg hunts because that's way too much work and I'm way too lazy for that.
And then you have to go back, you have to keep track, and then you have to go back and make sure there's not plastic stuff all over the place.
Yeah.
You know, things that the kids didn't find. I agree with you on the Easter egg hunt thing. That's not really my jam. I don't think so.
I feel like it's a better solution in areas where it's still light after 4 o'clock in the afternoon and you could actually do it in the evening. Although Halloween is on Saturday this year, you could make the entire day be nothing but celebrating.
I mean, that's what we're going to do.
More or less, maybe.
So why don't we do this? So we already kind of talked about the gist of what we're going to do. We're going to get some of our kids' favorite candy. We're going to play some board games in the afternoon. We're going to have pizza for dinner. After dinner, we're going to watch one or two spooky movies. And then we're going to attempt to send our sugar-filled children to bed.
Yeah, well, the good news is we get an extra hour.
This is true.
On Saturday night.
Mm-hmm.
So at least it shouldn't be too hard to get up on Sunday morning, I hope.
But let's do this. Let's pivot a little bit and let's talk about some of those board games. Now, we've mentioned that our list doesn't change a lot, but there are still some favorites that are on this list that we should absolutely talk about. So last year we added Horrified to our collection.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Horrified is a wonderful little game from Ravensburger, published by Ravensburger, developed by Prospero Hall, who is now Funko Games, that is a cooperative, basically Universal Studios monster squashing game.
It's very darkly themed, like the old Universal monster movies.
Right.
This is not a cartoon kids Scooby-Doo game.
Yeah, but it's not scary.
I mean, it's not inappropriate. Yeah,
it's not scary. It's just dark, like Unmatched is a darker,
exactly,
more gritty take. And it's really, really great. It's actually harder at higher player counts. So like two or three, it's actually a slightly easier game, I think, to play.
Which is unusual for co-ops. And
totally.
I like seeing that in
totally.
This game.
Yep, yep. But it's definitely an option. I mentioned the Unmatched games. Those are another set of games that are darker and more gritty. Certainly something, especially Cobble and Fog.
And that would be a new thing that we've added this year to our list.
That would be a new thing that we're adding to our list this year. That's another great option. Not really scary in that traditional sense, although Cobble and Fog has the Invisible Man, who is creepy, Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde, who is creepy, Dracula, who is flat out terrifying.
I think Jekyll and Hyde are terrifying too, for
what
it's worth.
Yeah, so there's certainly some scariness there that's definitely worth considering for the Halloween season in Unmatched.
Last year we had mentioned adding Visitor in Blackwood Grove.
Another super creepy game. It's just eerie.
Eerie is a better word for that one.
Yeah, so this is a deduction game where you're trying to solve the mystery of what rule describes items that can pass through a barrier to get from normal people to the visitor.
Yeah, this is Elliot and E.T. fighting against the various government authorities while playing the Green Glass Door.
Yes, that's exactly what this game is. And it's
but it's great.
Fun and interesting, and it's a little tough to kind of work through the rules for this game, but once you've got them down, I've literally never played this game where people didn't say at the end, can we play it again?
Yeah.
So it's really, really interesting. It's a great deduction game like that. Speaking of deduction games, another one is Cryptid,
which
not super scary, but it's all based on mysterious mythological monsters or a mysterious mythological monster and how to figure out where that monster is on a map. Another great game.
If you want to get even creepier, or if you have older kids and teenagers, another one we might add this year is Paranormal Detectives. We reviewed this one a little while back. We weren't super comfortable playing it with our kids. Like, it wasn't bad, But it's just a little weird to sit down with an 8-year-old and be like, let's solve a murder mystery by talking to ghosts.
Right.
Wee.
Right, right, right. But if you do have older kids, and when I say older, I mean like 10 to 14.
Yeah.
This is definitely something that could be an option. There are a few cards that have more adult themes to them. They're still not really bad, but they have a little like explicit content tag in the upper right-hand corner.
Yeah, you can find them without having to read through all the cards ahead of time.
Which is a great little option in that game. So that's Paranormal Detectives from Lucky Duck Games. Another good option. For something a little bit lighter, just thinking about the whole costume idea, we have The Grim Masquerade.
A lot lighter.
City.
A lot lighter, but
a lot lighter.
I really, really enjoy this one. It's another deduction game. It feels kind of like a social deduction game, but it's not. It's a logical deduction game, which you and I are definitely on the same page with this, that we really like logical deduction and not so much the social deduction.
Yeah, but, I just don't.
But I like the feel you get deduction. With Grim Masquerade, that you can play it up a little bit and it doesn't matter.
It doesn't. It's all icing and no content, but.
But it makes it easy to play it up and have fun with it.
You know, over the last couple of years, we've talked about exit boxes and unlock games and even Adventure the Dungeon, the newer series from Cosmos. And there's a lot of really great creepy options in there as well. Some lighter exit boxes like the Haunted Roller Coaster, some darker ones like the two-part Catacombs of Horror.
Yeah, I really liked the Haunted Roller Coaster. That was
good.
That was a good one.
Mm-hmm. I really like the House of Riddles because there were some different kind of physical challenges in that one that were really, really interesting. I enjoyed that.
Make dad do fun things.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. It was fun. But both of those were really, really good.
All right. Well, there's a good chance that the movies we're going to watch on Halloween might be Harry Potter movies.
So we might as well bring out a Harry Potter game or three. There are so many options for Harry Potter games, depending on what your preferred game style is. If you like deck building, you've got Hogwarts Battle. If you like worker placement, you've got a game like Harry Potter House Cup. If you like deduction, you've got something like Harry Potter Codenames.
If you want to do, you know, a co-op against a common foe and try desperately to bring down Lord Voldemort, you can try Death Eater's Rising.
Yes, you can. So if you like that Harry Potter theme, there is a game for you. And then if you really just want something that touches on a theme that fits into this Halloween realm, there are games like Potion Explosion from Simon, which have this alchemy kind of element to it. Or, speaking of alchemy, Quacks of Quedlinburg.
Yay,
which
alchemy.
Which we obviously
Explosions.
Love very, very much. Yes. But finally, the last two games on our list, I think, this year are Zombie Dice, which is just
always
a classic press your luck
always
die rolling game from Steve Jackson Games. And then the one, the common refrain, Ghost Fighting Treasure Hunters.
Well, you say that it's the common refrain, but Zombie Dice, we talk up literally every year because it's one of those games kids can learn how to play really young as long as the zombie theme doesn't bother you.
Right. All right. Well, that is about it for our list of games. We've got a weird Halloween coming up. And so do probably most of you. So what kinds of things are you planning on doing? We mentioned the post that's already in the Family Gamers community, but there's all sorts of different ways that you can let us know. What are you doing for Halloween? Is it normal? Are you in a neighborhood where maybe you can have a relatively normal Halloween? Or are you having to do something very, very different like we are?
If you are, I wish you the best of luck. If you want some more advice or commiseration, you can always let us know. I would start by recommending specifically the Facebook community post that we started to talk about this. But you can also contact us directly through Facebook or Twitter or Instagram at FamilyGamersAA.
That's right. If you want to find that community post, you can head over to thefamilygamers.com/community or just go to Facebook and search for The Family Gamers Community. There are lots of parents in there who would be happy to commiserate with you on the difficulties of navigating this wacky fall of 2020.
If social media is not your thing, you can always email us. Anitra@thefamilygamers.com.
Andrew@thefamilygamers.com.
Please don't forget to subscribe to this podcast if you have not already and you like what you're hearing.
Tell your friends about the show and leave us a review at Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts.
Whether that's Amazon Music, TuneIn, Stitcher, Spotify, you name it, we're there.
Yes. This is the best way to help us grow. Even more than anything else you could possibly imagine is leaving those reviews, leaving those stars. It really helps us rise in the rankings so that other people can see us. And that's important because the more people see us, the more likely we are to be able to work with publishers to get you the content on the games you want to know about.
And do more giveaways.
And do more giveaways.
Yeah.
That's true.
Last but not least, the Family Gamers podcast is sponsored by First Move Financial. Go to firstmovefinancial.com/familygamers to learn how the team at First Move Financial can help you pile up the victory points.
Thank you to First Move Financial for sponsoring the show.
Put a little extra candy by.
All right, well, that is about it for us this week. We are going to go and get some candy and get ourselves ready for a spoopy and spooky Halloween. Till next week, everybody.
Play games with your kids.